This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As always, the contest behind the contest last night at the Super Bowl was all about the ads. Half-naked men swarming a Chevy, heavy breathing over Doritos in the checkout line, Kevin Federline shoveling French fries for Nationwide Insurance. But the ad and marketing game is spilling way beyond TV ads and glossy magazine spreads these days into new and sometimes surprising arenas. Marketing on the web gets more personal, raucous, and in-your-face every day. Cell phones are the coming target. And as Boston learned last week when it melted down over a cartoon marketing bomb scare, it appears no terrain is off limits. Up next on Point, the new wave in advertising coming for you. We've got a great panel with us today. Joining me from New York is ad watcher Brian Steinberg. He's advertising columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Brian, thanks for being with us.
Hi, how are you, Tom?
We're great. Also with us from Chicago, ad guru John Condon is here. He's chief creative officer with the Chicago-based advertising giant Leo Burnett, the creative agency behind the classic ad icons Tony the Tiger, the Jolly Green Giant, the Marlboro Man, and much more recently. John Condon, thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And from Atlanta, we're joined by James Andrews. He is chief evangelist at Brand Influence, now the digital arm of GTM Marketing, a 10-year-old guerrilla marketing agency that works with clients like Timberland, Al Gore's Current TV, and the Anti-Smoking Truth campaign. James Andrews, thanks to you for being here.
Hey, Tom. Thanks.
Great to have you. Brian, I guess to everybody, first, before we even dive in, we all, or an awful lot of people, 90 million plus, watched the Super Bowl and all the ads that were in it last night. I don't know. Maybe, John, I should go to you first. What did you think? Is this a new world? We had ads here, including ads not made by pros like yourself, but by quote-unquote amateurs. Did you see something new in the ads last night, John?
Well, that was certainly an interesting development. You haven't seen that before. I think what you see is people are finding or looking for the ways to be as fresh and engaging as possible these days with the huge amount of media opportunities that are out there. And one way to engage people in the advertising is certainly to let them make it themselves.
Doritos did that. Let's listen for just a minute here. There were a couple. In a new twist, Doritos chose to run user-generated advertisements, solicited ads from the from the public, got maybe 1,000, aired the winner during the game. In a reported last-minute decision, Doritos also aired the runner-up, checkout girl. In this ad, at the grocery store, a man buys bags of flavored Doritos, and the cashier, lady, gets overexcited by his purchases.
Paper or plastic?
Paper's fine.
I like these. Oh, nacho cheese. Old school. Fiery habanero? Yeah! Those are hot! Oh, salsa verde. Oh! Blazing buffalo and ranch? Giddy up! Gonna need a cleanup on register 6.
Salsa verde and giddy up, and we get a little racy here in the amateur hands. Brian Steinberg, is this off the reservation or just, not an ad agency but look fairly familiar?
Well, I think it's very telling that PepsiCo, which owns both Doritos and Sierra Mist and Pepsi, decided to abandon one of its Sierra Mist spots last night in favor of putting a second user-generated ad on the air. It says a lot about marketers felt that this ad held its own with a variety of things made by some very big-name ad agencies.
But I have to say, James Andrews, it looked to me, even though it may not have been made by a big ad agency, it looked in the universe of ad agency products these days. Ad agencies themselves are trying to look kind of scruffy around the edges and not so polished and predictable. Did you see a new wave last night, James?
Absolutely. I see that not only in the creative, but also in the interaction between the online world, between the ads that ran, as well as the interactivity of sites like AOL and YouTube and just a new wave in interacting with creative in new and exciting ways. I think that we're going to see a generation of new creatives and new ways to reach consumers in sort of two-way dialogue.
What kind of interaction are you talking about there? I mean, we've seen the ads. You can still just sit there eating your Doritos and watching Doritos being bought and sold. It doesn't seem that interactive.
I see bloggers, you know, blogging immediately after the creative ran. I saw conversations that were happening in communities online after the ads ran. That was unlike other years in the past.
John Condon, we'll look at that. I guess the buzzword there is engagement. Get from the eyeball sort of into people's lives and interaction with them. But on the creative side, so there we've got the non-pros delivering their bit. What about the pros? What did you make of the array of ads last night?
Well, for me, there were a couple that stood out from the agencies themselves. And one thing I would say first, though, is that even an idea to go down the route of consumer-generated content, in mm-hmm. a lot of these cases, is an idea provided by the ad agency.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what's hot right now. Get the consumers involved and you'll get attention. And they did get attention for that.
Right. And, you know, the quest is for engagement, as you say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the engagement comes before, during, and after. You know, people are certainly participating by filming these things. There's a huge community of people voting on which ones are the winners. Then we watch it in the game. Then we talk about it.
But what about the ads themselves? There was a kind of humor, obviously big last night, also a kind of edginess here. Listen with us for just a second to the Snickers ad, which had a couple of car mechanics leaning over the engine. They open a Snickers bar, and I mean, a lot of people will have seen this, but somehow they both get on this candy bar from either end and meet in the middle, touching lips, not your car mechanic stereotype. They quickly decide here they need to do something to prove their manhood, like ripping off chest hair.
I think we just accidentally kissed.
Quick, do something manly.
John Condon, the absurd and racy with new prominence here, or the same old?
Absurd how?
Yeah, well, let me count the ways, starting with chest hair.
Yeah, it honestly, that one felt a bit staged for me. So it didn't really work in terms of the element of surprise or the payoff at the end. I don't know that it's going to ultimately be the most compelling way to sell a candy bar.
but clearly somebody's intending to get our attention in a new way. Let's listen to one more while we're still on the Super Bowl. Anheuser-Busch, a lot of Bud Light ads. In this one, a guy stands before a classroom full of young men from all over the world, presumably learning how to speak English. He advises them on how to get Bud Light in different areas of the United States.
Okay, class, if you're in the South, you say,
"Hey, feller, give me a Bud Light."
"Hey, feller, give me a Bud Light."
In New York, you say, "Hey, give me a Bud Light. You got a problem with that?"
"Bud Light, you got a problem with that."
In East LA, you say, "Give me a Bud Light, Holmes."
"Give me a Bud Light, Holmes."
More importantly, if somebody asks you for a Bud Light, you say,
"Don't speak English."
Refreshingly smooth Bud Light. Always worth it.
Bud Light?
Bud Light.
Bud Light.
Bud Light.
Brian Steinberg, so how do you see it? Do you see a new kind of train moving through these ads? Or, you know, humor's not new. Humor, even off-color humor's not new. What's the new edge here, Brian?
Well, I think in times past, Super Bowl was about creating kind of very grand, spectacular ads. Everyone knows Apple's famous 1984 ad that introduced a Macintosh, for example, or more recently, one showing Rangers herding cats for this technology company called EDS. So I think, but we're moving away from spectacular to ads that are shocking and offbeat. I think it's recognition, A, that the crowd that watches Super Bowl may be a little more in their cups than the usual audience. But also it's a sign that I think people just they need to be able to stand out. They can't go back to the board and say we spent X number of $1 million on advertising without some kind of proof that they really broke the bubble. And the Snickers ad is a prime example of wanting to stand out. Whether or not it sells more candy bars is another question. I mean, the question is Super Bowl that relevant to a larger marketing program? The debate for that may continue for quite some time.
And Brian, you write nonstop lately about upheaval in the marketing world. How do you describe that upheaval? It's more than just new flavors of ads
on even a spectacular event like the Super Bowl.
That's right. Well, you're seeing major shifts in how people get their information and entertainment. A lot of it is web-based, internet-based. And suddenly, that's a venue, an arena where people are much more in control of how they watch things. At the click of a mouse, they can get out of that website and go somewhere else or turn the computer off. On TV and radio and print, these are larger traditional media models where you just put an ad down and you assume someone's going to spend time watching it. But these days, you can DVR past a TV ad and you can mouse click away from a web ad. And so there are models where people all of a sudden have more control over what they do and how they watch. And it's causing a lot of problems in how you reach consumers who are more than ever eager to get away from things they don't find very relevant or entertaining.
James Andrews, it used to be sort of billboard, broadcast, or print. Now ads seem to come at us from in all kinds of guises from all kinds of directions.
Yeah, I definitely see it as opportunities to think out of the box and to use technology in new and innovative ways and to basically take something that's been out there, that's been driving a business and marketplace and innovate it into how you reach a consumer. You also have to look at the way that, especially when it comes to youth marketing, when it comes to youth consumer, how they take in media, how they have digital lifestyles that are very uncommon from a lot of older adults.
YouTube has got a lot of action these days. Smirnoff, the Smirnoff beverage Raw Tea became a huge success because of YouTube. The ad called Tea Pate was developed by an agency, uploaded onto the company's website, and then onto YouTube. 2.3 million people have reportedly watched the video and passed it along. The ad spoofs a traditional tough guy rap video. In this video, a group of khaki-wearing, polo-shirted white men on Martha's Vineyard rap about Smirnoff Raw Tea.
Yo! Straight out of Cape Cod, we're keeping it real. We're gonna have a pot, it makes a lady squeal. We're gonna turn it out with our parents' riches. We'll serve Smirnoff raw tea and finger sandwiches. We keeps it real, by real we mean rich. From New Hampshire to Vermont, from the mainland to Greenwich. Cause no one's hotter than a New England gangster. We drink raw tea on the South Wing veranda.
Makes the ladies holler.
Lemon, peach, and raspberry.
Polo shirts, wrap, and finger sandwiches there. They're blowing up on YouTube and different kinds of things on TV as well. Last night, a promo for David Letterman's show featured Letterman and his combatant, not exactly friend, but here they were all together, Oprah Winfrey, sitting on a couch and watching the game together.
You want the Bears, and I want the Colts, but we both win because we're in love.
Honey, don't talk with your mouth full.
I'm sorry.
A quick hit of Letterman and Oprah right there on the couch. John Condon, there's talk about this kind of guerrilla strike on TV, out of left field. You're not sure what's happening, not a traditional ad form at all, and suddenly, quite funny.
Well, sure. I mean, a good component to good storytelling has always been to not know where it's going or where it's coming from. And that's why you hang with it, to find out. So I think that, you know, even in the most traditional media forms to the newest ways that we'll come at people, that's going to remain constant.
So let's take it from that TV center point where everyone was last night and kind of move out from there. Brian, when it comes to TV ads, where are they headed? We're hearing about ads kind of flying at viewers from unexpected corners in unexpected ways, like that little just a few seconds of Letterman and Oprah last night. Where do you see TV ads themselves heading?
Well, I think what people want these days is to be, with TV, people can easily zap, an increasing amount of people can easily zap through. I mean, DVRs aren't all over the place right yet, but they are getting there. And people are also watching TV in new places like the internet. I think there's going to be a push by advertisers to really target, make sure that to tie the ad to the action people are seeing. In other words, if I talk to chief marketing officers who say that years ago they'd all want to clamor for the first ad break, be the first
sure.
ad aired. And now they when they come like 24 or Lost, they know that people are really fascinated by the coming weeks, the sneak preview for the next week. Why not be in the last spot when people are more paying more attention and more on the edge of their seats? They're looking to tie. You see, they're happy to be in Lost or 24 or CSI. Now they want to pick very specific parts of the program and tie their messages to what people are already seeing, so it's more relevant and more interesting.
John Condon, what about at this sort of edge of traditional taste. You had half-naked guys swarming over a Chevy last night, and jokes that were, especially in the beer jokes, very often kind of out there on the edge for a mainstream event like the Super Bowl. Is that a piece of what we're going to have, too? You have to be a little more shocking these days to keep people watching?
Well, that's one way to get people to watch. I think that you find the beer companies in particular have always been trying to push that edge a little bit. And so that's not a particular surprise. One thing that I think is interesting about, you know, what you had pointed out is that people go and seek out entertainment. 2.3 million people went to see the Smirnoff thing. We had a similar experience when we launched the Wii game for Nintendo.
Yeah, tell us.
Before the ad had ever aired, it was shown at a convention. Someone at the convention filmed it over the shoulder of the presenter, and it was viewed by a million people on YouTube the next day. So people are interested in things, and they're seeking out the information, finding it themselves, and passing it along.
And James Andrews, before we leap off to the web, do you see the web influencing the TV side of this?
Oh, definitely. I see that, you know, there's going to be a relationship between the TV and the web. I don't see, you know, creative and television advertising going away. I see that marketers will become savvier and learn how to reach people who may have a cell phone on their hip while they're watching a show, or reach people that may have a laptop on their lap while they're watching their favorite programming. So I just see a new engagement and relationship between the big screen and the third screen.
Let's get a little reaction to that big screen to begin with. Deborah's calling from Newport News, Virginia. Hi, Deborah. What do you see? Hello, Deborah. Are you there? We may have lost her. Maybe off to a small screen. Who knows? Let's go to Martha in Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Martha. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Well, I was at my computer on the New York Times page and watching an interactive feature they had, which were past advertisements on the in the Super Bowl. And they had from 1984, I think, when it was started, they had one or two for each year. And I was watching them all, and a lot of them were very, very funny. So I was enjoying that. But then whenever I'd come out and watch join the rest of my family watching the Super Bowl,
yeah,
I was horrified at how ugly the ads were that I just happened to stumble upon. There was one where people were smacking each other across the face really hard, and I think there was an attempt to be funny, but it really was not funny, and none of us in the room thought it was funny.
This was the Bud Light ad, I think, saying fist bumping as a kind of hip way of greeting is out, and the new greeting is a big old smack across the face. You didn't?
Oh, yes, it was just awful. And the funny thing is that I just watched a very amusing ad for Bud online, the Magic Refrigerator, which was really hysterical and made me want to have a Bud. But then I saw this ugly thing, and then there was a heart being chased around and being thumped and killed by diabetes and cholesterol and heart attacks and things. And then then the advertisements for the upcoming TV shows were so awful. They were scary, they were vicious, they were violent.
A lot of ominous stuff there. Martha, thanks for that response. John Condon, as a creative guy, how do you hear this? Martha didn't like it. She was offended. It was scary. Her word was ugly. Now, do you care about that, or is it catnip to some other part of the demographic, and are you pleased to have Martha unsettled for the sake of some other goal? I don't know.
I would just like to say that the Leo Burnett Company didn't do it.
okay. Yes. We won't pin them on you, but you listen as a creative guy listens, and you know there's going to be a range of reactions.
Absolutely. Humor is one of the most subjective things out there. And, you know, it's about knowing who you're talking to. So that type of humor is very relevant, hopefully engaging, and ultimately compelling to the target that, you know, Budweiser's going after.
So when you hear Martha saying her she came away feeling words like ugly, scary, ominous, that's just the way it goes from your perspective? It'll hit someone else who's the target?
I took that more in relation to the promos for the upcoming shows, and I suspect then Martha's not going to watch those shows. But I also believe that there's a large market for them And, you know, it's about knowing who you're talking to, ultimately.
Mm. James, begin to take us away from that TV screen, the big screen, as you call it, and into the smaller screen. Bring us up to date on kind of where the leading edge of web advertising and effectiveness is these days. What's working out there?
Well, it's interesting because I see this new advent of shocking creative that's on the web is similar to, you know, probably in the last 5 years when the Super Bowl became this platform and this showcase for edgy creative. Mm. I see that it's a place that, you know, the ad, the Bacardi ad or the Seagram's ad that you ran would run, or the Mentos piece, or there's been several other pieces that brands have used the YouTube distribution model to push edgy creative. But I definitely see us moving into a new era of sort of engaging consumers in new ways and moving away from just shock value and, you know, trying to become on YouTube's top 10 list and moving into, you know, engagement models where we actually drive consumers to move pallets of products. I think it's really important that we not just use the technology, you know, to provide an open distribution form for shocking creative, but that we use it in a respectful way and follow consumers in their lifestyles. And we do see a digital lifestyle for consumers. We see consumers that utilize technology in new and engaging ways. And you know, whether it's an iPod or a podcasting or taking this show that we're on and moving it to a podcast format or even a video podcast format.
Let's you were charged with putting together an ad promoting the band Dead Prez for Starz TV, James Andrews. The ad was called Freestyle, uploaded to the band's MySpace site and proved to be a viral hit. Let's listen to that.
You either pimping the system or getting pimped by the system. Don't want no piece of the pie. We want control of the kitchen. Gotta make this independent move on a mission to boss up. Can't be no slipping the slack and sitting waiting the shortcuts. Gotta use that elbow grease. It ain't what you see on TV. Don't think because you work for yourself that it's gonna be easy. Gonna be some bumps and bruises, many mistakes made, but that's how we learn. Ain't nothing free about being free. You get what you earn. Stay focused on the big picture, long term. Gotta know what you want. It's a struggle, but stand firm. We might be starting small, but that's all right, one day at a time. They say Rome wasn't built in a day. Stay on your grind. Keep hustling.
Freestyling for Dead Prez and Starz TV. James Andrews, you talk about YouTube distribution, or here MySpace distribution. And just remind us, that is all or primarily done by consumers. They're the ones listening and watching and passing it on.
Or aided by companies like ours.
Aided, but I mean, are you going to email it to me just out of the blue? You get it started, but can you make it a virus? I mean, a viral event?
We definitely know where the influencers are at, and we know the individuals that help spread the virus, and we can talk to them in respective ways and encourage them to take a piece of creative and hopefully do something with it, pass along to a friend or so forth. You know, it definitely, in the blog world, much like the online world, sort of different journalism and different content rules, meaning if they don't care for the piece of content or the piece of product that you would send them, they're going to write what they want to write and view what they want to view and say what they want to say about your product. So it's important to have relationships with people who we think have influential targets and influential spheres of influence around them. And we do a lot of that, helping push brand messages through our relationships with influencers.
Pushing through a whole new web of wow, what's the word? Outlets.
Absolutely.
Outlets is one word, but I mean, it's everywhere now. And by the time you get up to millions, it's got to be more than just influencers pushing it. Of course, Boston saw firsthand this kind of thing that turned into a bomb scare here, the Cartoon Network guerrilla marketing in the streets last week that got people all keyed up, shut the city down for a little while last week. We'll look at that. I want to keep bringing our listeners in as well. From Houston, Justin is on the line. Hi, Justin. How's Texas today?
Oh, Texas is beautiful. Thanks for having my call, Tom.
Sure.
I'm currently taking a guerrilla marketing class at A&M in Texas and reading a book on guerrilla marketing excellence. And just want to, when I had originally seen the ad on or the news play about the scare, I didn't get the full pick about what was really going on. And my first intuitive response was to go to YouTube and to really see what was out there and to get the news play.
So you heard about the Boston guerrilla marketing on the news and right away go to YouTube to see what's happening.
Right, because it was a past tense when I had got on YouTube and we needed to see, you know, what the what everyone was saying about it and really wanted to see the original ads from YouTube. And I think even though it was a shocking in the post 9/11 scare to a lot of older adults, being that it was trying to market to college kids and this and that, I think it really, even though Racy did exactly what they were intending to do, being that, you know, no one got hurt and all that, I wouldn't have done it, but I did think that they accomplished their goal.
So you're the marketing mage. You're the marketing man of the future. You saw these sort of light, bright electronic things with the components on the back that were hoisted up under bridges and around the city and to advertise the cartoon. And despite all the traffic shut down and the mayor and the police in an uproar, you're saying this is the way this worked?
Well, like I said, I wouldn't have done it, and I know it's a little shocking, and I don't think that they intended for it to be a bomb scare, but having the media play over it and being kind of an accidental big hit, I guess, I think that it is exactly what a guerrilla marketer is trying to do in this day and age.
Justin at Texas A&M, thanks for calling. James Andrews, is this the future? Is the shock out of the box going to require, you know, freaking out the public now and then, all the time?
No, I disagree. I think that there were steps that could have been taken by the agency to make it shocking, but yet less damaging to people's lives. I think guerrilla marketing is less about shock value and you know, big flashy shows, and it's more about non-traditional ways to reach consumers. I think that you'll definitely, you know, guerrilla marketing is not new. You know, I've been involved in it for probably 15 years, but it's about reaching consumers outside of print, radio, and TV in new and innovative ways, and I don't think you need to resort to shutting down a city to do that.
Brian Steinberg, on the other hand, when we're not all watching the same screen, some are small, some are big, some are middle-sized, and not everyone's on YouTube, the sensibilities aren't shared. What one part of the society may find humorous, another may find shocking and scary.
That's absolutely true. In fact, I'm finding more and more these days that the web stuff can be a little more risque, where the more traditional stuff cannot be. There are some interesting viral examples where, you know, even like some companies are selling products that you really wouldn't sell to a mass audience on the web. There's an example with a grooming shaver for men from Philips Electronics that you wouldn't talk about it in the way you talk about it on the web on TV. I don't think CBS and NBC would allow them to broadcast the ad. But on the web, there's a little more sense of no boundaries, and whoever likes it will come to see it. You know, that the grandmother wouldn't come to see the ad, whereas the young kid would. And you can be a little more flamboyant, I guess, in a venue where for a smaller amount of audience.
But do you see the motifs that may grow up on YouTube then spilling over, maybe even last night with the Super Bowl, into the big arena?
Yes and no. I mean, I do think, you know, people are very cognizant. I mean, I think that the prime example is the Super Bowl with the Janet Jackson episode, where people realize all of a sudden that it's a huge family audience and they just can't do certain things.
Mm. Stacy's calling from Boston. Hi, Stacy. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make a comment about the sort of, I guess, paradoxical impact on consumers of these new creative, innovative, non-traditional forms of advertising.
Mm-hmm.
I have two personal examples that I'd like to share.
Yeah.
They're kind of this notion of the highly targeted direct marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess on the one hand, it can make you feel, the consumer feel very special, as though the marketer is talking directly to me.
Have you actually felt that, Stacy? Have you had that happen?
2 days ago on Friday, I received in the mail a package from Stacy's Pita Chips.
Okay.
And they had done some research and found all the Stacy's in the United States.
Oh.
And sent them all a package saying, to Stacy, from Stacy, and it had a whole box of pita chips for the Super Bowl.
So they didn't know if you liked pita chips, but they knew you were a Stacy.
That's right, and they even spelled my name. They only sent it to the people that spelled their name like their product name. So
S-T-A-C-Y, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then it was a bumper sticker that said, "Have you kissed a Stacy lately?" And
talk about personalized. The product's named after you,
really,
or vice versa.
It made me feel wonderful. You know, it was just very targeted, and my name is somewhat unique. So
okay.
It felt great. But on the other hand, it can also be somewhat unsettling, this kind of this notion of Big Brother watching. And the example that comes to mind is I often shop at Target. And, you know, within weeks after shopping there, I'll get in the mail a packet of coupons, and they're all for products that I have purchased recently or competitors of those products. And so there's this thought that, you know, when I check out...
My gosh, who's
capture,
watching? What's up?
Yeah, they capture my data, and it's just really unsettling, especially in the age of identity theft and everything. So
yeah, that's very up close and personal from two different angles. Those are good stories, Stacey. Thanks for those, and enjoy the pita chips. Brian, how about it? Is there a limit to how kind of tailored and personalized consumers want marketing to be? Does it creep them out at some point?
There is a little bit of a creep-out factor. The fact of the matter is that technology is allowing people to get a lot more addressable. I mean, your cable set-top box has more information than you realize that tells people what you're watching and when you're watching it. And people are, advertisers are, in fact, getting up with programs to watch your viewing habits. There's a motion afoot to try and come up with commercial ratings that let people see how many people watched different commercial breaks and to understand how people are running back and forth from channel to channel. So there are a lot more efforts afoot to understanding what you're doing and when you're doing it and how to reach you with an ad that's relevant to you when you're doing it. It can be a little creepy. Depends, I guess, there are privacy issues. And, you know, as everything, when consumers push back, that's when the limit is found.
There's a middle ground and then that really intimate ground. In the middle ground, John Condon, your ad agency, Leo Burnett, put together a series of ads last Thanksgiving for Butterball, trying to break from the traditional style using real people and real user-generated content. Let's listen.
Happy Thanksgiving, Grandma and Pappy. We really, really, really miss you. We know you can't be here, but I guess we'll have a happy Thanksgiving with everybody else. Bye. Gobble, gobble.
Butterball. Make it perfect.
So we get a little bit of polish at the end and a whole lot of homemade sounding stuff at the beginning. John, that sounds more intimate, and then you get to what Stacey's describing, truly intimate, where the seller knows what she's buying, knows her name is right under her nose.
Right. Well, a couple different things wrapped up in there. I think that when we go into these new areas and we're trying to engage people in different ways, that we're not doing it simply for the sake of being in a new area, mm-hmm. but that we're doing it in a way that is really relevant and compelling for the particular brand. The Butterball example, what we did was the promise of the Butterball brand, as you know, is everybody comes together around the table at Thanksgiving time.
Mm-hmm. There's the heartstrings to tug.
Right, and you know, people are these days are not able to quite so easily always gather together. People have families spread all across the country. So this was a way to let people reach out to family members at that special time in a way that's wholly consistent with what the promise of that brand is.
So it wasn't
user-generated content for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
And what I heard in the Stacey's chip story mm-hmm. was that she felt better about it when she was rewarded. And I think what we have to understand is we can't make people listen. We don't command their attention. We can't make things viral. But what we can do is we can make things interesting and we can make things rewarding.
And how personal do you see things getting as we continue forward here? People may remember the Minority Report, the Tom Cruise movie, where as he goes through almost anywhere, but certainly in a shopping center, his eyeballs are being read. He's being identified. The ads are changing to speak directly to him. Is that the future?
I don't know. We're doing that right now.
Where? How? Give us an example.
No,
tell
I'm
us,
kidding.
Please.
I'm kidding.
See, we're ready to believe. It all seems just rolling out there.
Well, there are, you know, Bluetooth technologies that enable you to interact with people based on their location. So some of that is not quite so far off. But the thing will always be to make it rewarding and make it interesting for the consumer, make it something they want to participate in.
Is a sack of chips going to be enough for that sort of invasion of personal space? What do people require to feel adequately rewarded for the intimate, in-your-face, come on?
Well, you know, Stacey sounded like she had a smile on her face, so I think that worked. You know, we talk about DVR and TiVo and, you know, this is a new thing. And, you know, technology-wise, it is a relatively new thing. But, you know, people have always had the ability to not pay attention to things that weren't interesting. So really, the game is to make it interesting so that people engage.
James Andrews in Atlanta, talk to us about intimacy and getting very close to people in a personalized way. What fresh, new sort of on the edge examples of that are you seeing or doing?
Well, we work a lot with what we call interactivists, and those are, for instance, on the Truth campaign. Those are individuals that look like the target, dress like the target, engage with the target, go out on the road, whether it's the Vans Warped Tour or an And One Tour, which is a big rock tour and a basketball tour, respectively. And they engage with the target and you know, look just like the intended consumer.
So you're putting out images and sounds that suggest I'm like you, our interests are the same as yours, let's
exactly.
Get together.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a comfort level, and there's a trust level, and there's a trust factor that comes with having youth and having individuals that look just like the target. And it's engaging, and it feels right, and it feels like you're not compromising any of the brand qualities and the brand values.
And just how tailored can that get? How micro can you segment that target audience?
We have ways, I mean, in looking at passion points and looking at consumer behavior and being able to target and making sure that we are speaking directly to that consumer, whether it's a punk rock a crowd or whether it's a hip-hop crowd or even segmenting hip-hop in many different segments. You know, we have the ability to look at consumers on a broad level, and I think that's from talking to people. That's from new ways of research and innovative ways of using research.
Let's take a call from Kate in Roslindale, Massachusetts. Hi, Kate. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering why we're not getting into the ethical question of guerrilla marketing. Because, I've been doing a lot of thinking and writing lately about just how we get messages from magazines and television and internet and the sides of buses and signs everywhere.
Mm.
Even I was in a Cambridge public school recently, and I noticed the school children were eating Pringles potato chips printed with advertisements for things other than potato chips. And I mean, I just...
This, so the food in their mouths, little billboards.
They're eating advertisements. So, you know, what gives advertisers, marketing companies, multinational corporations, the gall to invade the space that they're not renting, that they do not own, and to push into our space any more than they already are?
So where would you draw the line then, Kate? What, a billboard, I guess, maybe you would accept, but what's too much, too close, too invasive?
Too much, too close, or, I mean, you know, sending people out into the street who are just talking about a product, you know, just to seem like regular citizens but are really hired for a company. Too much is placing things, you know, on bridges or walls. I mean, regardless of any bomb scare, that was circumstantial, situational. What is it doing there in the first place? I mean, I see this as being unethical.
Brian Steinberg, how about it? Kate wants an ethical line drawn here. Do you hear that conversation in the marketing world?
More on the consumer side than the advertiser side. I think advertisers, you know, it's a competitive world to reach, and they're looking for new ways to do so. So they're trying new things. The world is gray until it's made black and white for them. You know, when the consumer reacts and says, "No, I didn't like that, and I don't like your product anymore," that's when they back off. But until they get that, they're going to keep pushing and moving the line in the sand a little bit farther and farther.
So advertising printed on the potato chips, James Andrews, does that sound offensive to you, or like a great little up-close billboard?
Well, I don't know if offensive is the right word. It's a little, I don't know if I want advertising in my child's school to that extent. I think that, you know, advertisers do, and brands do sometimes go a little overboard, but they're, you know, they're given that opportunity either by the school or by somebody else. I think it's you know, it's just about engagement, and it's about being respectful of the consumer. And who, I don't know the instance in the Cambridge instance, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, schools are allowing advertising to come in through non-traditional ways. And that definitely isn't where we go. But
if there's a line there, it sounds awfully fuzzy. I'm not sure that I hear one that's been worked out of the gray at all. Let's get a call from Halifax, Nova Scotia. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know, Kevin?
Well, I've just got a question for the panel. I started a media brokerage, and we dealt in traditional media for a number of years, and now we're moving into the more digital-based media, digital display signage, narrowcasting networks,
mm-hmm.
Some of the social networking sites, and wondering how large corporations or large customers are allotting monies and funds to these new non-traditional type medias.
It's a good question, John Condon. How about it? 2.6 million for 30 seconds in the Super Bowl, we're told. But what about in all these new arenas? Are customers, the kind of giant customers that you're accustomed to dealing with, are they stepping up, putting up money to get into some of these more obscure, or at least the new frontier arenas?
Well, the truth is it's a case-by-case answer, but absolutely. It's hard to imagine a company today that doesn't have at least a web-based, presence of some sort. Think of any company you want. There is a site. There is ability to interact. There is communication. There's dialogue to the extent that it's possible. And I think, that dialogue is really what we're trying to establish. And I think that's part of the reason it was hard to come up with a hard and fast answer to your, potato chip question.
Mm-hmm.
Because, what you have is you have a dialogue with the consumer, and it's based on trust, and you define the acceptable parameters as you go. And, advertisers mm-hmm. will make some mistakes, and I'm sure consumers will let us know when we do. And through a process of dialogue, I think the relationship will actually be better over time.
Of course, money and what people had to pay was, in a way, a gatekeeper for a long time. Now that's down. In publishing as in advertising, not so clear where people are going to spend the money. Let's get one more example of an ad in here. Tom Dixon is chief executive of a blender company called BlendTech. He invested about $50 and began creating videos, uploading them to the BlendTech website. He blends, his blenders have marbles and magnets, even an iPod. Sooner or later, it's viewed more than 17 million times without a whole lot of money being spent. Here in this ad, Dixon wears a scientist's white lab coat and tests the blender, his blender, with a wooden rake handle.
First, I'm going to push the soup button. Now, this is not full speed, but it'll give you, it's an automatic cycle. It runs for 90 seconds, so a minute and a half. So let's see what we can do to a rake handle in 90 seconds.
A rake handle or maybe an iPod in the blender. Brian Steinberg, what about money flows in this very fractured, diverse new media marketing landscape? Is it draining away from the traditional ad buys? Is the new world going to cost as much, or is it cheap, quick, guerrilla hits?
Well, at present, I think you're seeing slivers of money come off traditional budgets and go into like the online and mobile and that sort of thing. People want to experiment a lot. You've seen it in the marketplace for television has been flat for the last 2 or 3 years. Now, that's still an awful lot of money being put into television and print and radio. These are large things that have proven track records. They reach masses of audience. Some of the newer things reach much smaller audiences. Therefore, they're cheaper. As time goes on, you can accumulate larger audiences on newer media things, and there's good measurement of them. I suspect you'll see prices go up, but we're not quite there yet. We are at some sort of inflection point, though.
So, John Condon, you're at Giant Leo Burnett. Do the new media look like a problem to you or an opportunity?
It looks like an opportunity. It's probably the most exciting time to be in advertising right now. With so many different canvases to paint on, it's pretty much a creative's dream.
James Andrews, you're with a smaller shop. Do you see new opportunity here? Can you go after the giants like Leo Burnett with all these new arenas opening up?
Our goal is never to go after the giants like Leo Burnett, but to be a friend.
Thank
and
you,
most
James.
Of our customers are the Leo Burnetts of the world. I see a huge opportunity. The phone's been ringing off the hook since January 3rd. Really, it's been ringing off the hook since the fourth quarter of last year, where we definitely saw an increase in customers that were looking for new and innovative ways. It's a great day. Just to echo his comments, we're looking for a great year in 2007.
Sounds like it's going to get closer, it's going to get more intimate, and every corner of every arena being inspected, examined for marketing opportunities. We'll be watching. Interesting to see how consumers respond with the questions about ethics and lines as we go forward. I want to thank all of you for being with us today. James Andrews of Brand Influence and GTM out of Atlanta. James, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
And John Condon, Chief Creative Officer at Leo Burnett in Chicago. Mr. Condon, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Brian Steinberg at The Wall Street Journal. Brian, great speaking with you. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.